millimeter from the southern side. It's a covert, and it's a manga line. Okay, all right. And all the other PLO from Chaga, all attend the meeting, and some of the other people. As you know, the custom of this committee, we don't want to read tomorrow or here an inform or a reliable source or an unknown source that said that. And we want to know that who we're talking to and who are talking to us. So we will introduce ourselves. My name is Freddy Adams. I'm chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic Development, which comprises or oversees the Department of Economic Development, Energy and Mineral Resources in the National Council of Provinces, and I'm a permanent delegate from the Western Cape. let me start from my left down, and I'll end with my co-chair on the right here.
Good morning, my name is Beth and I'm going to the Board of
Directors. Goedemorgen. Good morning. My name is John Linda, ek is lid van die komitee, ek is van die Noord-Kaap en ek kom van af in die baie waarom betrek met die vriendelijke gemeente.
Good morning, my name is Dave Evans, I'm from Houghton, Johannesburg, where it's extremely hot today, thank you.
Hi, I'm Madame Anel Rose, my name is Masipa Godekhalo from Limpopo Province.
Morning, my name is Jomo Nyambe from Mpumalanga Province.
Good morning, my name is Elza van Lingen and I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Morning, Guinness and Clay from the Northern Cape.
I'm not introducing. Oh. Yeah.
Start there at the bottom.
Over here. Hello, good morning. My name is Mohamed Khalid Sayed. I'm from Cape Town and I am from a solutions agency, Ethical Solutions. Yeah.
I'm Mr. Evans of BMG. Yeah. I'm Mr. Evans of BMG.
Yeah, good morning. I'm Mohamed Khalid from South.
To come back to you, so just hear who you are.
My name is Yurei
Makubalo, Committee of Action. Good evening. Good evening. NEC members, Faga.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Douglas Cullen from the Faga National Office, specialized in economic development. I think this meeting between Honorable Kunda and Abel has come to a stop and we can carry on with what we are here for. No, we are not here to listen to their meeting. We are audience to their meeting, ma'am. Thank you very much, ma'am. Now, honorable members and the Chaga delegation is also overseeing economic development, part of our portfolio. On our visits to municipalities, we were worried about the LED and the role of LEDs in municipalities and the role of organized local government in the economic development in such municipalities. And we have found out that some of the municipalities haven't got the structure or the infrastructure to drive these LEDs and to really be the spearheaders of LEDs. Some of them are based it on the IDPs, some of them based it on other issues and things, but LEDs plays a very important role in terms of in a municipality, and that's why we have seen expert to call Chaga to come and brief us on the LED strategy the role that Sauka is playing and the role that, or the guidance that Sauka is giving these municipalities in terms of local economic development forums and those type of things. So, Councillor Wiertman, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The member of Upington, I will tell him I've got quite a good knowledge of the Central Karoo Otters Health Carnival. So that's why I started my career in local government until I got to land it in politics. Thank you for the opportunity. Yes, we agree there is some problems, especially with our smaller municipalities. Capacity is a big problem, obviously. But we, from Sauka's side, we're trying to assist. Obviously, it was realized, you know, our capacity is also not that good, and I hope that with our Lakotla coming up, we will try and resolve this problem in assisting more and more on our basis. But we would like to give you an insight on our role on the economic development, and for that matter, Mr. Douglas Coven is our specialist in that field. And he will try and assist you in telling you exactly what we are doing and how we're doing it. I think you have been given some examples already as well, and I hope and trust that you will be able to use that. Unfortunately, it's not a key to a BMW. It is a key to LED as such. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Over to Douglas.
Thank you very much. Do you mind if I sit while I do the presentation? Thank you. Yes, as the Chair said, we've handed out some material of one of our projects on the memory stickers, a wide ranging of documents which are referred to in this booklet which we distributed at the recent Sauka National Congress in Durban. So our aim is to educate new councillors, build capacity within them, and give them the tools that they need and the information that they need to improve the practice of LED. And it can't happen in a one-off manner, as you will see. So I've got quite a few slides. When I found that we had this room and this presentation to ourselves, I'm going to capitalize on that. But I won't talk to every point on the slide. I think most of them you have, and hopefully there'll be room for a lot of questions and discussion throughout the morning. When we kickstart any presentation on local economic development, the first question is, what is it? And this has always been one of the challenges when it comes to economic development, is that it means different things to different organizations, different people, different councillors, different spheres of government. And this has been a long history of development in South Africa that has gone on a kind of roller coaster of the journey. And I think what we at Sauka is trying to give a simplified but consistent message around LED. The second point is, what are the national, provincial, and municipal roles in LED? And by that I'm saying LED, while it happens in a local sphere, is impacted by what happens in a neighboring municipality, at a provincial level, and a national level. That it's always this debate between the center and the edge that talks to what touches the lives of our people. And the last point, I think, exactly what the Chair raised. Why are success rates in LED so low? Why are the strategies not being executed? And what are the root causes? And I think it's not a one-dimensional problem, but there are also pockets of excellence, which we as Sauka are trying to highlight, share, mainstream, etc. So the structure of the presentation, I'm going to go through quite briefly, looking at LED, Sauka's position, job creation and development, point that government cannot do it alone, taking LED more seriously, perspective for municipalities, what we kind of, the message we give them, and a conclusion. In between the presentation, I have added a few examples of the work that Sauka does, so I apologize. Those aren't in the pack now, but I thought it's more practical to give them the examples that we are doing. Okay, I'm going to tell you some things that I'm sure you already know, and these are in the Sauka position paper, developed in 2008-09 and updated in 2009-10. LED, project-driven, unrealistic targets, the fact that if you have a plan that equals success, very little reporting, poor relationships with the formal businesses and informal businesses, and poor integration, because LED is spatial. It doesn't stop at your municipal boundaries. Goods and services flow across boundaries. So Those are some of the issues. Limited political support in buying and the governance of it. And this, I think, was reinforced by the recent Treasury report on local government finances, where in LED it said ultimately leadership, good leadership and good administration lead to better LED. Capacity building, are the right skills in place to identify real economic opportunities? And the LED factors that are missing in most LED plans, market access strategies, supply versus demand side strategies, and integration into existing value chains. And this whole system just creates these unsustainable projects that have cost a lot but have very little impact. So what is Solvit's position on LED? I think what we're saying is that we don't need any more policy on local economic development. It's been in the framework was developed in 2005-06, and South Africa as a topic has been looking for this over a decade. The fact is that a lot of the pillars and the theories are in place. It's now about institutionalizing them, mainstreaming them, and putting them into best practice. There needs to be better alignment of LED to district, provincial, and national LED strategies. And we need to say that LED, there cannot be a one-size-fits-all. What is appropriate in the city of Joburg or the city of Cape Town is not appropriate or meaningful or is at the right scale in a smaller town. So this one-size-fits-all IDP, this one-size-fits-all approach to EWP, etc., cannot work when it comes to economic development, especially within the poorer, more rural municipalities. And we need to develop the right capacity in these municipalities. Secondly, there's too much work on implementation, or in some cases, but not enough work on what is the impact of that implementation being, or what is the impact on the side of the system, on the supply side versus the demand side. So the interventions that are made are not grounded in any kind of monitoring and evaluation. As far as we also say that there are pockets, or even more, there's a lot of good practice happening in local government. And one of the projects, that the one particularly that we've disseminated today, the LED Network project, is literally about finding those good practices and sharing it amongst local governments to say, hold on, it's not rocket science. It's been done in one municipality of a similar capacity. Maybe we can learn from that. And the third area is obviously alignment to national government priorities and funding, such as EPWP, tourism development, DTI incentives, and other areas. So SALGA has already made a lot of inroads in various initiatives. And SALGA has a unique situation in that we have a national office that deals with this lobby advocacy policy area. And we also have project managers, program managers, and advisors in every province who can unlock, advise, assist, etc. So SALGA is one of the few organizations that's able to handhold as well as guide as well as disseminate good information. And as we say that although there's no size one fits all, we agree that partnerships are key. SALGA as an organization is not solely responsible for LED. There are various departments who came to own LED, the current portfolio sits with the Department of Corporate Governance. There's also the IDC, the DGI, the DBSA, then the various agencies. You can look at EPWP from an infrastructure perspective. So this adds to the gray or the complexity of the definition. But what has happened since my time at SALGA, and particularly going forward, is that municipalities are looking to SALGA for more support, more strategic advice, especially at the leadership level, and SALGA is already piloting various projects, two of which I'll mention today, the P3 and the Commonwealth of Local Government project, where SALGA itself is offering hand-holding services to various municipalities, mostly rural, across the country. So this part, this few areas, is not in your presentation, I apologize. I just thought the fact that I had the opportunity to present, I'll just go through them very quickly. The SA LED Network project, which is some of the information I handed out, is basically a knowledge and information platform with various partners, most of them highlighted here. Quite interesting, we also partner with LEDNA, which is the Local Economic Development Network of Africa. And it's basically a web portal and materials such as this that help share, aggregate, identify, and disseminate information on local economic development. The portal has over 3,000 members already across local government, provincial, national government, and there's a newsflash on this website sent every day. So here are some of the services, obviously the website, the newsletters, the case studies, and the events. These are distributed to all councillors through the SALGA provincial offices. And also to say that the LED network as a project also goes out to these are just not even the latest list of municipalities, and writes up the good practices that are happening in those municipalities. So it's not just a kind of online service. It basically travels around the country, and the phone call that I just got now was from the team they actually at Aspire in the Eastern Cape. So this project is done with the assistance of the GIZ, the German donor agency, and we partner with all the stakeholders in South Africa, from the DBSA, the IDC, Legner, etc. The P3 project, this is a project between Botswana Local Authority, Namibia Local Authority, SALGA, and the Swedish Agency for International Development, or the Swedish International Development Agency. And it's very similar way of building capacity of local governments through LED and transparent governance. Here are some of the South African municipalities that they've been working for in 14 municipalities in the Eastern Cape, from Ulundi through the Free State, Naledi, Western Cape, Bothell Bay, etc. The list is there. And this project has picked up specific LED tools and another financial management tool called Transparent Tariffs, and implement them in a hands-on manner together with the SALGA office. And I think some of the outcomes of this have been for very successful partnership arrangements happening in these municipalities, as well as capacity building within SALGA, because now these tools, methods, and guidelines are now available through SALGA to municipalities in a more sustainable manner. And we are often taking some of the learning that we're getting from the P3 project, for example, around transparent tariffs and setting up business forums, to players such as Costa, such as Treasury. So it's been a very successful three-year project. The local government maturity tool, I'm not going to bore you with the slide, but this is a tool that came out of TIZ and work done in Gauteng, and it's about an assessment or a benchmarking of 32 questions that take place in municipalities to do a kind of what are the gaps, what are the issues, where is the municipality doing well or not, and it goes across these various areas. I'm not going to go into detail, but it talks about what's working and not working in a municipality. It's not a policy or an auditing tool. It's basically a qualitative assessment, and the assessment looks at two areas. If you think about a matrix, it looks at your strategy and your insight versus your ability to implement. So just to give you an example, you could have a fantastic strategy, but you don't have the capacity to implement that strategy. Versus you could have a lot of capacity, but you've got a weak strategy. And therefore, you'll end up in these various quadrants. And I'm not going to confuse you, because the questions in the questionnaire, which are just done over 2 hours with the municipal manager and the head of LED, are very practical questions. Like, what are the sectors in your environment? How much capacity does your LED unit have? And that maturity, which is a way of saying it, comes up. So that number of 64 municipalities is actually a lot more now. We've actually done it in more provinces. We are working together with this organization called VNG, which is the Dutch Local Government Authority. And SALGA officials are going in with the municipal offices to do this assessment in their municipality. So it's probably over 80 municipalities that have had this assessment done. And as I said, it's not a policing tool. It's basically to say a reflection back on the municipality to say, please fix up your structure. These are the weaknesses. Go back to these basic issues. And the third area is the whole project is the Commonwealth Local Government Forum. And they have a program called the Good Practice Scheme. And this is about peer-to-peer learning, not only within South African municipalities, but across the Commonwealth. So municipalities in South Africa wrote up a proposal. They're looking for assistance. And the Commonwealth Local Government Forum found a partner within the Commonwealth. And this sort of this is phase two. There was a phase one. But here, Vembe is partnered with an Indian municipality. Mumbani is partnered with Trivandrum in India. Matoli with Butler City with Glasgow. Mombela with Sunderland. Steeshwete and Ifakwini with Leeds. I haven't gone into all the examples here, but I'm just going to talk briefly about this one, because it's relevant to a point I'm going to make later in the presentation. Leeds was partnered through with Salga through the Good Practice Team with Ita Queen. And the point of this project was to establish a procurement center of excellence. You can forget about LED. One of the major opportunities for development is procurement in your local government. Your spending, how that impacts your local area, whether it's through EPWP, what the goods and services that you buy, etc. Whether it's imported, exported, local, what skills you're developing, are they labor intensive, etc. These are all the dynamics. So this good practice scheme was around 20 these two cities and coming up with a procurement guidelines and operating procedures and a guide to tendering. And these have been done and are all available. And Salga, I'll mention later, is in process of packaging this information so that local governments can, of all sizes, can learn from the work that's happened in Etiquette about how to use your procurement to stimulate your economic development. So I put this picture here. This is in my hotel down the road. It's a Khayelitsha cookie. Do you know if you've ever seen these? It says here, this cookie was baked for Southern Sun Hotels, previously unemployed ladies of Khayelitsha. The whole point of procurement is that what has happened in Etiquette is that they've identified that they can spend their money locally. And the way they spend their money is not only can be targeted, okay? So just as an example, from 2003 to 2010, their spend on priority black enterprise went from 207 million to just under 2 billion. Black enterprise development, 15 million to just under a billion. Women empowerment from roughly 38 million to under a billion. Small, medium enterprises, 200 million to 2 billion, etc. So their spend on local businesses has increased significantly because they had targeted procurement. Now, this process is under threat from the regulations called the new procurement regulations that are coming out on the 11th of December, are come enacted. So I'll raise that later when you talk about the impact of national government on local government. So the legislative environment for the vendor pilot is inhibiting the new regulations, inhibiting factors to using supply chain process to promote LED. And obviously the timely payment of small and medium providers was also a way that we have to, local government has to promote local LED. And as I said, Salga, together with CRGF, are compiling a paper that will assist guiding replication of this initiative in other interested municipalities in South Africa. So we come to the bigger picture, the new growth path. There are various highlights I'm not going to go into them. I'm sure this committee is well aware of what's in the new growth path. But the heart of the target is, to put it into context, you need under 14,000 new manufacturing businesses alone to meet the government's target of 5 million jobs. But what we're saying and what we took to the National Congress of Salga, Conference of Salga, is that municipalities and LED is going to have to become much more visible from a municipal leadership perspective. And municipalities are going to have to rethink how they're looking at LED from a more inclusive, proactive stance and support of the formal as well as the informal economies. So when it comes to the new growth path, there are some key areas that it impacts municipalities, and municipalities have to respond. And I've listed some of them here, the investment in infrastructure, which talks to energy, water, transport, roads, housing, etc. Labor-intensive activities, which talks to EPWP and many others, environmental and social programs, green economy, waste management. In fact, this is not a new topic to local government. The recycling of waste is highly labor-intensive, and as a program is running very successfully in many municipalities. Leveraging of social capital, rural development and regional integration. And this talks about from cooperatives to small-scale agriculture, etc. So, in a sense, we're reframing this in the sense of the developmental local government mandate from the White Paper, and we are reinforcing that partnerships are the only way municipalities can fulfill these responsibilities. And municipalities need to look at how they can unlock relationships and partnerships from their communities to develop LED in a sustainable, responsible manner. And these are the themes we kind of suggest through public-private dialogue or state-public dialogue, through infrastructure, through LED, through human resource development, because you can have a great economy, but you don't have the skills and capacity for the people to operate in that economy, and sustainable economic development. But the challenge is not easy. At a local government perspective,
to debate about what etheric heat is. He's focused on these two areas. Proto-etheric heat versus creating a conducive environment for LED. And unfortunately, many municipalities cannot find this balance correct. The one is taking this bigger picture, which I'll speak about, and the other one is you cannot operate in this long-term paradigm of creating development when today people are struggling, starving, there's poverty, there's inequality, and there's unemployment. So what we're saying is we need to take LED more seriously. And we have to do something different. You can't, the heart of LED is doing an assessment of your municipality, and the heart of doing development and national development, LED, is also doing an assessment. What are your competitive advantage? What are your comparative advantage? And you have to look at what you have to work with. You cannot depend on the firms you wish you had or the workers you wish you had, but the firms or workers you've got. So this, sometimes you'll find that LED strategies are never implemented because they're not grounded in the realities of that environment. And that may be why this consultant-led LED or this LED strategy that tries to create beaches in Mpumalanga or waterfronts in Northern Cape, they're just so disconnected from what that municipality really is about. So, if we have to look a bit beyond the municipality, LED remains poorly defined or understood, and what we'll find is that LED is poor quality LED is in the poorest of areas, which I'm sure you're finding is the same. So this all comes back to what is LED. If you don't understand what it is, it will always be poorly implemented, poorly designed. The limited integration and cooperation between district, local, and provincial initiatives. You'll find this debate between IDP, the Integrated Development Plan, versus a provincial GDPS or a provincial tourism initiative landing in a municipal space. And I think what we'll find is that there's so much leakage, so much wasted expenditure, so little alignment. Why is that? I think is that planning at a local government is poor. Planning across local government is even worse. And coordination within the province creates this kind of pockets of missed opportunity. And the third area is that LED is not given the political weight it deserves, and it should be a key priority of government. And I'm very glad that we're sitting at this forum because the topic of local economic development for the Department of Economic Development, I don't think is found a home. And that's the reality. LED currently sits with advocates, the Department of Corporate Governance, and it has sat there for many years, and I think LED, I use the word, is not a hot topic anymore. It's a bad word, a bad swear word. And where can we go with this? I think it needs a reinvigoration. It doesn't need a new policy, but it needs a fresher breath of air. And maybe that calls from a developmental perspective, and maybe it should reside either in the Planning Commission or the Department, to say that we see local government as a player in this area, not just the metros or the provinces, but in fact, national initiatives such as industrial development zones, such as all the funding that goes into the neighborhood development grant, all in local government, but yet they're not seen as part of LED. And core integration such as programs such as EPWP. I'll talk a bit more there. The increasing divergence between big city and others makes universal policy development difficult. So, you know, they'll issue a guideline, it's for all local governments. City of Joburg has 100 people in the department. Pretoria has got not even one, half of one person. And that person is overworked already. Very little M&E, inability to identify real opportunities. I'm just going to talk about two issues. I made this presentation a week ago to another select committee. That is the reporting of all municipalities across EPWP projects. The darker orange or where they were looking. So that's this is the third year of EPWP phase two, but the ninth year of EPWP in total. So that's quite a few municipalities not reporting still. The top one is the ones reporting on infrastructure, and environment and culture and social. I think you can count them on your fingers. So this program, EWP, we fully support the SALGA. On paper, it is one of the best conceptualized programs and makes sense from
Development Economics 101. But why hasn't it been institutionalized in municipalities, particularly the rural municipalities? Is it a capacity issue? Do they have enough funding to kickstart the project anyway? And the question we would ask, would it make sense to put the resources where they have the greatest impact and most viable? One of the feelings that we say further is that EPWP has imposed on local government instead of integrated into the practice of local government. And while the grant is in the process of being changed again, which is extremely problematic because it's taken 3 years just to kind of get where we are, now it's changing again, when in reality it's not that complicated. Municipalities in the areas that are presented, this is where there's dire need for infrastructure and maintenance of infrastructure and the greatest opportunity for labour-intensive projects. One suggestion that we would certainly say is that it cannot be a one-size-fits-all for EPWP for these municipalities to get them on board, and we would certainly encourage greater linkage between EPWP being dissolved into a municipal infrastructure grant type project, where the projects are identified the year before, and this not just monthly reporting and online, some of these areas don't even have internet at the project site, or, you know, just the red tape around EPWP could be done in a lot simpler way, and we believe have a greater impact. I'll briefly talk about the new procurement regulations. These regulations were gazetted on the 6th of July, or June, 6th of June, but at our meeting with the department at a forum, I can guarantee you that 50 to 70% of municipalities have never seen these regulations. SALGO has never seen the regulations, or were never consulted on these regulations, and they are due to be implemented on the 11th of December. The second point, and this is part of a much longer presentation which I can share with you, there are only 70, so part of the regulation is that everybody has to have a BE certificate, which costs R1,000. Except if you have a certain turnover below a threshold, but then you need an auditor's letter, which are often fraudulent, etc. So there are insufficient certified providers. There are only 78 agencies in the entire country. None in Limpopo, none in Mpumalanga. And the 20 are in Cape, in Western Cape, are all in Cape Town. So that's the one side. So your business in George, you need to get accredited to deal with the municipality. That's the challenge. The second thing is that it costs you R1,000. So limited, and the third thing is, okay, cities like Cape Town, Itaquini's got 50,000 service providers on their database. That's a lot. Now you can't, so I'll talk to the three options. Okay, the guidance has not been provided and there's one for size fits all approach. So I'll talk about that now. So the options for a city now, a municipality, whatever, by the 11th of December, they've never seen these things before. You need to take your new policy to council, which is a 3-month policy for the best of time. Your options are now, you go with the new regulation, but you can only deal with those service providers that have got the BE certificate. So that will mean that you're dealing with only a small percentage of your database, and those are the high-capacity ones, the white-owned businesses, people who are on the board, etc. Two is, you decide, you know, forget about the regulations, I'll take my chances, and you mainstream them, and you carry on procuring for non-certified providers. The Auditor General will come and give you an audit query immediately. And the third option is that you try to phase this in a way, and it will take you years for your database to be accredited. So it will still take a long time. So this is issues that when you present this to the Department of DTI and National Treasury, it's like chalk and cheese, people speaking completely different languages. And these are not low-capacity municipalities crying. These are high-capacity municipalities crying. So this is how development, and the last point, the one-size-fits-all approach, inhibits LEDs to target procurement. See, that the procurement doesn't have any targeted groups. It's about local content. So on the one hand, government, through its youth development strategy and procurement from women or people with disabilities, people unempowered, see, it set aside specific targets. The new regulation is very simple. Local content. You assess on functionality alone and DE,
and local content. So to the fact is that they'll spend more if the content, the materials and services are procured locally. That's all. Not targeted to women, like the example I showed you of ethically, people with disabilities. So this concept will not find resonance in the new regulations in local government and procurement. This is a major step back, I think, from what it means for municipalities when it talks to local development, local LED. It's like national government saying, buy local, local government saying, you're preventing us from doing that in a certain way. Okay, this is the theory that we go to municipalities with. Municipalities, the Constitution talks about, I'm sure you're familiar with all of this, direct release of power and having indirect and direct influence on the areas in terms of job creation, partnerships, etc. So this is about that balance. Pro-poor versus conducive environment. Kroger recently highlighted a legal opinion to the Western Cape District Municipality. A similar theory that LED is about creating this local environment, but as developmental local government talks, you're also about stimulating jobs, building the economy, etc. So you can't just sit back and do nothing. So I'm not going to go into this. This is the theory of LED. This is the classical theory of LED, and if you're interested, it's the most simple way I can explain the environment of business LED concept. Here you're creating a conducive environment of business. That's your municipality. If you want business to invest, you want people to grow, you want to create a conducive environment. The area there under your thing is your safety, security, your skills, your urban regulation, your council management, land use notification. So now you want to stimulate this. You want to improve your benchmark of where you are. So you focus on areas of urban form, transport, efficient services, infrastructure, and you go beyond that by saying we're going to target specific sectors, we're going to look at certain areas like you see CBD projects, or you see tourism in Cape Town, or you'll see sector support like the wine route coming together as a tourism route, or you'll see the BPO sector being stimulated, or you'll see agri-processing as a sector. Then through that, you also try to assist small and medium-sized enterprises, and you also try to attract investment. So whether it's the Heineken plant in City Bend, or if the Northern Cape trying to get the SKA, whatever it is, that's what you're trying to do. That's the classic theory. And that results in new investment, more tax revenue, and greater jobs. That's how LED should be put in practice, but in reality, that's too complicated. Wilson saying that municipalities have to look beyond that and look at more direct interventions. So here we're talking about EPWP, government support to SMMEs, strategic sourcing and procurement, the story again, aligning with key national provincial priorities, and greening, just another example I always like to say. Greening is the most effective way of combining municipal services with job creation and development. So the challenges are we need to shift behavior, we need the right type of leadership at local government, we need to raise the profile of LED within a municipality. Often LED is a small little office with no powers, functions, or voice. In fact, LED should be moved very close to the municipal manager office. Not to have its plan on its own, but the plan of the municipality is LED. That's the essence. Areas of improvement and identifying good practice. So at SALGA, we try to simplify the cluster of the noise. There are 8 points, or 9 points on here. LED strategy must be simplified, locally owned. The positioning of LED section must be close to the municipal manager's office. Capacity constraints must be addressed. LED strategy must be appropriate to the local conditions. It doesn't have to be a 30, 45-page document. It can be a 3-page document saying our sectors are farming, agriculture, and agro-processing. These are our constituents. These are the challenges. These are the informal sectors. These are their challenges, etc. Economic intelligence requirements. I can honestly say that there are many LED strategies which have no grounding in economics. And that's not, I'm not making it complicated. They're just not grounded in, this is the population of my area, these are the people unemployed, this is the age of those people. They don't have this information at their fingertips. Stakeholder relationships, you know, you have to have, LED's not done alone, it's done through partnerships, as we said. Acknowledging the informal economy, and this comes through the SALGA National Congress, and monitoring and evaluation. And this is an example from another project in this Commonwealth Local Government practice, which went through the process that I'm just trying to illustrate now. creating the right environment for LED, repositioning LED, and the four objectives: stakeholder engagement, support for the unemployed, long-term strategy, and an economic investment incentive policy. So this is from their decision presentation, and remember they partnered with Sunderland in the UK. So they repositioned the LED, they created a structure across Mombera, chaired by the municipal manager. They have specific targeted intervention for informal traders. I'm sorry I couldn't bring it, but they've actually developed a catalogue of the wire-making plants, which they take with them to export for this. So they've kind of formalised the informal there. Obviously, everything about trade, giving them structures, etc., consulting them. And they've also developed, which is quite unique, a framework for delivering incentives. So as a municipality, they are trying to attract development on the eastern side, the side which is the most underdeveloped and is closest to the Kruger Park. That's a whole presentation on itself. And all this information is on the LED network portal. So the conclusion, okay, Salga, through his position paper, legal paper, PCCLG, LED network, etc., we are doing many things. We are not the only stakeholder in LED. We have a role to play. We are a stakeholder. We appreciate that. But we certainly believe that we could do more if we had more. And we also believe that, you know, in some cases, this ownership of LED issue creates more confusion. A greater focus on position on the informal economy. I haven't spoken a lot about it here, but the informal economy is which in the Constitution refers to a mandate of local government is management of street traders. But we have to look beyond that. The informal economy includes people like domestic workers, taxi drivers, street traders, waste recyclers, etc. And this constitutes a large body of people who live below the radar but are living in our cities, can be seen as a nuisance, can be seen as an opportunity, but the reality is it's a growing sector that has to be acknowledged. The mainstreaming of LED tools, the ones around maturity tool, we're going to roll that out further, the LED tools from the P3, etc. Building the right pool of capacity at the local government level. We are currently working with the Centre of Local Economic Development, which is a partnership across UJ, University of Joburg, and Western Cape currently. Dialogue and partnerships. We obviously try mainstream our good practice and accessing correct LED data. Ongoing is the council induction and LED training. I mean, this book was a start. LED was in the council induction. Alignment to the legal path, donor alignment, informal economy, economic intelligence. And ultimately, we want to build more capacity within Salga to have a kind of LED support team, which we don't currently have enough capacities to do. So the concluding thoughts, as I said, LED is going to become more visible this year. The word LED itself, maybe we need to relook at. We need new responsible, accountable local institutions and accountable local leadership. We need to take ownership of LED and donor, as government. A partnerized, mobilized an army of LED across government to continuously improve the local economy, and sometimes national government policies have unintended consequences. The last few slides I'm not going to go through, but you can read them. These were the outcomes of the Commission on Economic Development and Planning at the Salga National Conference. The five key areas, which I think I've mentioned, one we haven't mentioned here is the urbanization and rural migration, which has a long-term ramifications for development. And then these are the recommendations, which I think I've alluded to in the presentation. The one here that we haven't spoken to is including technology as part of economic development as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Cohen. Councillor Nathan, is there anything you want to add?
Chair, I think the main object of the forum is that we need to create more jobs. And I think we're sitting with a problem that our partners, and I'm talking about on government level, and if I'm being so bold.
I think the biggest problem is that we would like to create jobs. But I think our biggest problem, I'm going to be very bold in saying that our partners from government side doesn't play the game. We are there on the coal face of things. We know exactly what our problems is. And I think as Mr. Cohen has alluded there is, what we must keep in mind is that Carnarvon is definitely not the same as George. Definitely not. So they've got different problems. We've got to think in terms of that. And that is our biggest concern. We would like to get the government departments more in line with us and listening to us. That is our biggest problem, because they are sitting on a case of implementing theoretically. We would like to implement practically. I think the situation, as has been mentioned by Mr. Cohen, as far as the procurement policy is concerned, I've got tears in my eyes for those people. They haven't got the money to start a business. You know, to get an auditor signature on a piece of paper, you're talking about $5,000 to $6,000. That is totally out. Going for an SME the certificate, I know for a fact a business in George has paid $1,500. Papers has been sent to this evaluator, and the certificate sent back. Nobody did any inspection, whatever the case may be. And that is our biggest problem. As long as we can get our government departments to talk to us and listen to us, that is our biggest problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Cohen. We have been joined by some gentlemen in the room, and also a lady. The gentleman next to Honourable Sinclair, if we can just get to know who you are, and then the others that have joined, can you just tell us who you are, please? You can leave your ID number, and that for another day.
My name is Colin Mayne.
From where?
From Parliament.
The youth league and cope your discussions, you can take outside the room. Switch off your mic, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The name is Marcello Brunello from EFCOM.
Thank you, Marcello.
Lord Mata, I'm coming to research.
Honourable members, as far as I know, there's one chairperson in the meeting. It's open for questions.
Thank you, Chairman. Myself and my esteemed colleague here were just discussing if we're going to march, you know. Thank you very much. Very interesting presentation and very interesting debate and so on. But whilst I'm listening to this presentation, you know, there's so many things running through my mind in terms of how to address the real issues in our community. And I think Councillor Neertman referred to it in terms of creating jobs and so on. Now, we experience it on a daily level in our constituencies. If we go on oversight, we recently went to KZN and so on. And you see that our country and our municipalities have got so much potential. But the reality is that those potentials, unfortunately, for many reasons, are not used and utilized. Now, if I make my remarks there, I do it in all objectivity. And things that I've been saying over time. So I want to start to say that I think it's necessary to say a few things about the broader debate in South Africa. And one of those is the fact that we've got too many spheres of government. I'm a strong proponent to say that we must have a strong national government and a strong local government. And this, the whole issue of our provinces, there's nothing with due respect to them, nothing more than ivory towers and post boxes, and I think we must move away. Now, I know that the divided alliance won't agree with me, specifically because they're trying to build something here in the Western Cape, you know. But I objectively, I think that's part of the broader debate. Linked to that is the issue about district municipalities, which is also involved in local government. Personally, I don't think there's a role for district municipalities.
I agree.
Because all these two spheres has taken away money that's supposed to be injected where it really matters. Now, as I say, the municipalities and the district councillors would object to that, but I think we must have that broader debate. The second issue, Chair, is the issue about the spatial development framework of South Africa. Now, I don't know how myself and Mr. Nedlin missed each other, but I'm also from Carnarvon at one stage. And I could talk in Brakwater and Drangdansa, so I know that part of the world very well. But my colleagues here can bail me out. I always make the remark to say that we must move away from the golden triangle of economic development in South Africa. We must stop, with due respect, focusing too much. Yes, we can't neglect it, but we must stop focusing on the Johannesburg, the Cape Towns, and the Durban, or the Queens of this world. And we must start, if we really want to address the policy that I see on a daily basis, in places like Carnarvon, like Pietersburg, like the, we must start thinking out of the box. And unfortunately, I'm a bit critical of government to say that we're not thinking enough, the government to do this, we're not thinking too much out of the box. The third issue, Chair, is the issue about the LED that's become a political tool. And it's a highly charged remark, but I'm going to say it. Because of the poverty level in our community, councillors, unfortunately, most of the time it's councillors from the governing party, use LED as a tool to create the perception that they're delivering to the people, which are not. Let me give you an example. Small little place like Loxton, there's now a new road project going on. This past week they called me. What does the councillor do? He called people and he insists that they must be ANC members before they work on the project. It's unacceptable. It can't be. And as long as councillors use LEDs as a political tool, we're going to fight. And it's certainly that's one of the things that I'm very critical about. It's not right. The fourth issue, Chair, that I want to raise is, and it's also a bit to link with the spatial development framework. Nowhere in the presentation of SALGA was there any reference in terms of the broader economic development strategy of our country, specifically referring to the industrial development zone, the IDZ. And I think it's important that we must understand what government on a national level is trying to do with the IDZ and how we're going to link it up together. And then lastly, unfortunately, once again, I'm going to give this principle, but the capacity of the municipality, including the council. I mean, you sit with LED officers, which at some stage of their life was either a nurse or a teacher, but because, with due respect, they were good comrades, now suddenly they're the LED men. Link to that, the councillors that allocated to that. And these are about five or six reasons that I want to add to why LED is not working. Now, what is the solution? And I want to be more positive when I conclude. The one thing that I miss in terms of searching for solution is the issue about incentives. Local authorities must work on benefits for potential investors to invest in that area. Investors throughout the world want to invest if they know they will get a very good return and benefit. Now, I think it's something to do with a broader South African framework about incentives, and certainly I think we're not doing enough of it. And the last, I mean, there's many solutions. It was referred, I'm not going to repeat what I've seen here, but the last issue, the last possible solution to grab on is to engage the green economy. And there's a lot of incentives. I mean, the IDC yesterday or over the weekend launched a new fund with German government and stuff. So, once again, back to the rural area. That is the area where you can engage on wind, on solar, on biomass, on many aspects, in terms of creating jobs and preventing that us as public representatives in the future don't face the reality like the people facing in Tunisia, Libya, and all those places. Because if we don't address this poverty, that is the road that we went through.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Andreas partly covered me, and I would like to agree with him that it's a serious issue that is happening in Camus, and it's heartbroken to see that married men can't get a job because they are not part of the ruling party. It's heartbreaking. Chair, I want to go further and just ask a few clarity questions concerning. Let me first say thank you for this detailed report. Thank you for opening and making it so easy for anybody to can. If you can read, you can understand it. I think the most important part is how do we implement this thing. And I like what you said that, and you were blunt, Councillor Netting, and you said that, and you were bold. You said that governments are not playing his part and coming to the table. I can testify to that. I agree with you. I've seen it in my constituency, and I like as members, we must be honest with ourselves. And I'm glad that in NCOP, 95% of the members are really honest and self concerning what's happening on the ground, because we are on the ground and we're going over there. Chair, I would like to just ask a few things concerning the impact of what you just said. The impact of national parliament or national government on local government. Can you just clarify on that again? I want to come back to that. And then the regulation that is going to be implemented on the 11th of the 12th. It might sound a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it to my colleagues. Perhaps one of them might have an answer for that. What is it that we can do to assist the poor people? Because as I've listened to Mr. Cohen, if this thing are going to be implemented, the very same poor people that local governments are intending to assist and to help will not be helped. If this is the right thing, what I just heard today, I don't think we can sit here as members of parliament, as public representatives, with our jackets on and say we represent the people. I don't think we've got the right to say that. And I'm honest, we can't say we represent the poor people of this country. And I'm going to plead today with my colleagues in the ruling party. Guys, you must take this thing seriously. I'm pleading with you because it's only you people that can make the difference. It's time to be honest with ourselves because you're the government. And I'm pleading, take this thing seriously. And don't make this thing a political issue, because poor people are dying. The other thing I would like to say, I agree with you. The opportunities, and it's true what you are saying. Staying in Mir, in the Kalahari, and staying even, let me take Mir and Upington, in the same, very same district. It's two different challenges in those municipalities. Totally different. And the people are making these regulations and these rules and laws. They're sitting in Johannesburg under the aircon, in Cape Town and in Durban. They're sitting there in PE, knowing nothing about these areas. Knowing nothing. And they make rules and regulations for people who are staying down there without knowing the situation of these people. I think as a government, we must stand up. And I put the challenge to the chairperson of this committee, because this is his heartbeat. This is his baby, the chairperson of Economic Development Select Committee. This is his baby. He must take up this thing very seriously. And whatever support he needs, I will support him all the way. Because it's about the people and not about certain individuals. The last thing, Chair, let me just say this. It's true what Mr. Cohen has said. And again, I'm going to make an example of Upington. There was a moratorium on purchasing of land and stamps and all that. For the past 3 years, Upington couldn't develop. All of a sudden, there was a piece of land, a big piece of land. In 2006, certain people applied for the land. Because of the moratorium, they couldn't sell the land and they couldn't lease the land for 99 years to the people. And while the moratorium is there, the very same council are selling that land to the rich people in the Western Cape to develop. And those are the types of issues that you are facing here as local government. And I agree with my colleague previously, we make this thing a political tool in order to get votes. You're not assisting the poor, you're destroying the poor. So, from my side, I think IDC, NEF, and all these development banks and all these people, they must really come to the table. They must really. I don't believe in making. You say, I'm going to give you water. Then you make a regulation and ask questions before you can give me the water. I don't believe in things like that. I believe in simple, straight rules and regulations. As a government, the people have trusted us, let's give them the water, they need the water. And last year, you were with us, I was with you guys in China last year. In China, you have seen what those people are doing. The people are being empowered, ordinary people, you go to a big market, it's ordinary people of China who are in control of those buildings and those markets. And we as a government, we must really put our money where our mouth is and stop just saying things and doing things. And thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Honorable Bunda. China, you talk about China, the socialism. And that's the way to see how socialism works. Honorable members, you heard that Honorable Bunda said that, you know, that was one of the reasons at the Select Committee we have asked Salga to come and do the presentation just after the National Conference. Because, as you know, constitutionally, Salga is part of the National Council of Provinces. And it's not a type of a big brother role, but more a type of assistive partnership. Talking to national government, as it is our mandate as delegates to represent provincial interests into the national sphere of government, but talking to national government and also carrying in the Southern local government sphere mandate into the national government. So that's why we in the NCOP, we can't say that we have, or we can't turn a blind eye to what's happening at local government. We are there as representatives. And that's why constitutionally South has got a representation in the House to carry this forward to our national partners and say, but guys, let's sit around the table and see what we can do in terms of making work lighter and work smarter and uplift the poverty of our people. Honorable Van Linden.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I thought it was very well done. I would like to know if we could get an electronic version of this, because there are slides that are missing, and it was actually, we sat here paging through the slides trying to follow so it made it very difficult. The second reason why I'm asking for it is because when I saw this was coming, I took the initiative to ask the rest of the province to give us some questions and so on. So I'd like to distribute this to the Eastern Cape and see what comes up. Because the more people that are informed, the better, and the more we can take it seriously. I want to start off by saying, is SALGO holding someone accountable for the strikes that cost municipalities a lot of money? The role of local government and rural development, in rural development, and are there any MOUs signed? Are municipalities involved in land purchases for land reform? Do municipalities have plans in place to manage common edges? And what is being done about the overgrazing of common edges? I don't know, it's not me, it's not my vibrator that's making the noise, Jacob. What successes have you had in municipalities in the Eastern Cape? I think it comes up in your slide. And then the obstacles. You mentioned a couple of obstacles, but I'm not quite sure if the real truth is on the table, if you are not extremely diplomatic about it. And then how are we going to overcome the coordination between the province and the local municipalities? How are we going to, if you understand what I'm saying? And then, are the projects properly monitored? Who is responsible for monitoring those projects? And are the municipalities timely informed of budgetary provision? Then, what is SALGO doing to assist local government in the new legislation? I can tell you that I am accommodation establishment, or I have one, and I also suddenly, it's a bed and breakfast, so I also suddenly have to go for a BEE certificate, and they hit you with R1,000. Then you go on the internet, or you speak to somebody, and they tell you that the DTI can give it to you for R400. But you still need the signature of your auditor. And it's really, really, really difficult, especially when you deal with small businesses. And we find that small businesses are very often bankrupted by government not paying. I had a case this week of a person that did catering for a government department in Turku, catering for 500 people, not paid, lost all her furniture, equipment and everything. It is really, really bad. So we must look after this. And then Honourable Gunga raised something very important about exclusivity and what he called rich people. Claims here at the moment along the West Coast is having exactly the same thing, where they are developing, instead of proclaiming the town, they're developing it into an exclusive area. And the people that went there initially with their retirement funds and started up shops, and they are all going to go under because they won't be able to afford to live in that area. So it is exclusive development at the cost of the poor and the middle class. I thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Palinga. Honourable Gamedes was saying that was... the Honourable Tolik calling you, or Honourable Masibuke. Honourable Gamera. I think I'll start with the last comment made by the chair, that of SALGO has intensity in the NCOP. Those which are a platform for SALGO to air their views and to put forth the challenges of SALGO. But the unfortunate part is that those things aren't properly utilized. And I thought that even during the SALGO conference,
I think the resolution should have been taken about this issue. You know, whether someone should be sent here permanently or what. Because that's a very good link. I mean, now for SALCA to say government is not in partnership, whereas they've got all rights, they actually have seats to be part of government, and they're not utilizing it. I think that should go back to SALCA. Secondly, immediately you talk of LED, to me, who comes from KwaZulu-Natal, I first think of water. And then I think of electricity, now ESCOM is here. So whatever you do, in order for LED to be there, you need these two. And what's happening on those fronts, be it in urban or in rural areas, work off in rural areas. One issue that I talked to was the informal economy. I got to have it last week, you know, I got a report. I say in a rural area in KwaZulu-Natal, in Ndlovu, and there are young people, youth, who in those hospitals also open some car washes and so on, you know, and they make about 200 drives a day. But you find the very same municipality closing those down and taking this opportunity that the young people had to employ themselves to feed their families. What is the position on that? You go now, I see in terms of regulations and pilots, in towns now you see those people that are working, in most cases 99.9% women's hair on the street. At the same time, they're making a living. So that's where I think even the municipality would need to relax, even the bylaws. Because if you close those people down, where will they find their next meal? So the municipality just takes a decision, sends in security personnel, they just take the staff. So I think SALCA needs to be sensitive and just advise us on what to do. What I would have also liked to hear was the rough estimate of LED's contribution to the GDP. If that would have come so that we know that if we target 4% or 5% and where do we stand as a country, if we say we want to concentrate on LED. Honorable Gunda talked about China. SMEs are booming in China. They are actually the core of LED in China. One issue that the presenter talked about the infrastructure, but I learned in one workshop that municipalities do not have integrated infrastructure plans. We do have IDPs, which are integrated. They do their own thing, but the infrastructure is not integrated. So one department, one municipality does decide to do one thing, and it's not integrated with another department. Last but one, almost a call. How do you link with LED personnel in municipalities? Are you using the traditional way of buying through the municipal managers? Have you ever had a summit of all LED officers, managers, and just talk one language over a table or in the hall with the real people? Because if you go through the municipal manager, you still have to call them, and they're getting it bad hands. And I would like to see a situation where we prioritize LED and just to put it on the map and say they are making it in KwaZulu-Natal, all LED managers or officers, and we hear what they have got to say. But lastly, I think the presentation was very good. It was well prepared and well presented. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kamere. Honorable Nyambi.
Thank you, Chair. Let me join and be part of those that you welcome the presentation. I think it was well good, really interesting us to have a good picture of what is happening. That was really good indeed. Chair, maybe it will assist us as members in future, so that when we have such a presentation that is really giving us a picture of what is happening when coming to issues of LEDs. If we are asking questions, to ask questions. If we want to comment, to comment. But at times, I don't see us assisting if ever we want to talk about issues that have got some implications in terms of the Constitution. Because if I'm remarking and dealing with the presentation, nice as it is, and talking about issues that I know very well, that even if I can raise them, there's nothing that can be done even tomorrow or next month, because it has got some constitutional implications. It means we have to amend the Constitution. Then we have to be careful about such issues. Not that they are not wrong. And what makes me to comment about that here is that the present people who are raising those issues will say, let's leave aside politics. Yes, that is a political issue. What a contradiction. We have to be careful. My two questions is, one, they have had an opportunity to interact with the new councillor in that conference of SALT, maybe to give us a better understanding of their experience of the situation, what will be the challenges, how can they assist us so that we can be able, because as people representing these very same provinces, we are directly also dealing with these different provinces. And what is linked to that, Chairperson, is that can it be possible maybe to have a guide, whether in a form of a document that can prepare for us, that will reflect these achievements and challenges per province. So that if I'm from Mpumalanga, I'll know that there's this good thing happening in Mbombela, but at the same time, there's this challenge that is happening in the very same Mbombela or Thembisile or Nkomazi. So that once I go to Nkomazi or go to Thembisile, I can be able to even work with SALGA so that you can assist as the point that has been raised by other members. Then the other one, I've seen that it was very clear that in terms of these certified service providers, you still have a serious challenge when it comes to Limpopo and Mpumalanga. So what would you advise? What is it that you are recommending so that we can assist the two provinces? Because it was very clear. Then the other one is the issue of the new growth path. We're always seeing municipalities, if they're coming with their LEDs, they must align with the new growth path. With their experience, because you are not now theorizing, I mean, it was very clear from the presentation that you have detailed information, you are grounded, and you have worked with the previous councillors, you are working with the current one. What would be the strategic point that you can raise with us so that we can be able, as members have said, we're in KwaZulu-Natal, next week we're going to be another one. After next week, we're taking parliament to the people who will be spending the entire week in KwaZulu-Natal working with various municipalities, and if ever we can be assisted so that we just not go there to hear from what they'll be saying, but on what we got before taking parliament to them and what you are presenting to us, then after leaving, we'll have that serious impact on the ground. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Namish.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd also like to know from SALGA how efficient the municipal development agencies are, because I have found in Kopa and Kakadi it is really a problem. And I'd like to know overall, and perhaps a provincial analysis like Honorable Yami here next to me asked for could give us a good idea, because really lots of money is pumped into it. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Councillor Mirkin and Mr. Cohen, over to you.
Mr. Chair, yes, this has been recounted a whole back for. So, it's a mouthful. I'm going to give Mr. Cohen a chance to run through, and I will add to him at the end. I'm possibly occasionally more blunt than he would be, so I'm sure first will need to say that. Thank you.
So I'm running out of pages of my book here. So I'm going to have to work from the back. In fact, the point was raised in the questions, which I appreciate, and all the comments I really appreciate, and I heard them, I wish I'd written a different presentation. Like 3 points, and we could have discussed those. But the truth is, this is just a tip of the iceberg of a sanitized version of 278 municipalities, 20 government departments, provinces, 32 local government agencies, various programs, etc. So all your points are very valid. I'll really try to touch on some of them. IDC, local economic agencies. To be frank, a nice idea on paper, a nice 100 million rand project, very little fruits on the ground, delivery. Some very successful agencies, I'd say out of the 32 or 33 that they've created, maybe 3 or 4, and those are very, very particular circumstances. Strong CEO, strong relationship between the municipality and the CEO, able to leverage other funding, not 100% dependent on the... So the criticism of the agencies is that they just became another municipality because they were just governed by the same regulation, the same politics. They're unable, they dreamed up very big projects, but were impossible to deliver on those projects. So when we engage the IDC on that money and that the outcomes of that, it's like, well, it was an idea. We tested the idea. But there have been other methods of achieving the same thing. Just to compare the DBSA, I have got it was called the LEDI, Local Economic Development Initiative. Now it's called READY, Rural Economic Development Initiative, which had a different methodology, which was about leaving capacity in the municipality but to achieve a similar purpose, which I think was a lot more cost-effective and probably easier to replicate than setting up a whole entity, which has to be audited by the Auditor General and causes huge headaches. So overall, I'm not a fan of local economic agencies as they are currently. But for example, Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality has got a municipality in the CBD. They were given a very focused mandate. I can't comment how successful they've been, but they're one of the more successful because they were given a very strong project. That is your project, the CBD of Nelson Mandela Bay. That's it. Not build a hydroelectric plant. Or, you know. So that's the comment. But I've got a whole report on that if you want, on all of them, and that I can share that with you. So right now I was trying to connect to the website of this project. I don't know why I couldn't connect now, but on this website, LED.co.za, you can go into every province and all the municipalities in that province, and there will be good practices on all the municipalities in that, from small to big, whatever we've documented or gathered over the 3 to 5 years. And they'll look at case studies, they'll look at commentaries, they could be provincial reports. What we don't have there is obviously the bad stories and the challenges. There they may come up as questions to the forum or other things, but SAGA as a provincial office, give or take, all of them have got an LED program manager and maybe 1 or 2 LED advisors who go out daily to visit municipalities. So I'd encourage you through this forum or through us or as your kind of constitutional right to have an informal meeting with them, and you will get the specific issues that are on the ground, the project implemented, the provincial non-alignment issues or internal issues to the municipality. I mean, Mpumalanga specifically has got a huge challenge between local versus district. It has got and the Free State similar. This concept of district holding back local projects and politics and egos and control and power, when in reality, as the MP said, people are suffering. Opportunities are being missed. And I can't excuse anybody from that. It's not my area. But the recommendations, and I can also give you the presentation we made to the DTI about the regulations. Obviously, we are concerned that there was no consultation. Two is the implications on local economic development as understood by municipalities. Three is you can't implement these regulations in all municipalities. You would have to phase these regulations into high capacity, medium capacity, low capacity. So obviously starting with the metros because they have the capacity to do that. But why implement it in the middle of December? Why don't you at least implement it in the July, the beginning of the municipal financial year, so that there can be a campaign supported by national, provincial, local government. And this affects all stakeholders. It affects parliaments, it affects provincial governments. All constitutional bodies are affected by this. So to run a campaign to get your to get people certified is a whole process that the municipality has to be partly accountable for. So phase it in over 3 years, at the financial year in that order, and then obviously alleviate the contradictions. If you're targeting youth employment, build that into the regulation. And I'm sorry, there may be a few that I'm missing there. I can't remember all of them. Targa, in terms of your question, we've had first of all, Targa provinces meet people regularly. Targa has provincial working groups on economic development. We also hold national round tables on local economic development. We have one this year, it'll be our third year, but it just went late because of our national conference. Our year plan, we may have it early next year. And there we bring small, medium, and large LED practitioners around the table. And we, similar to this, maybe it's a bigger, sometimes a bit smaller, debate either a theme like tourism or informal trade or debate process or policy issues. Unfortunately, if you take any from when LED was starting to be analyzed, you can take my presentation, you can take a presentation from 3 years ago. I'd say 50% of the issues are still the same. So unfortunately, when you deal with the LED people, they will raise the similar issues. And really, we need to do something differently. And from a global perspective, we're really trying to say LED needs to be higher up in the municipal hierarchy. Whether it's a funding issue, it's the ownership from the municipal manager or the mayor, etc. But we do engage with LED practitioners, and not only in local government. LED practitioner is somebody in the private sector, or ESCOM sees themselves as an LED, they have a role in LED. They own land, they electrify areas, we can't do spatial development without power, etc. So there are wide-ranging issues. The topic of informal economy, it's my personal pet project or passion. We have certainly tried to highlight that the informal economy is part of the economy, and the situation that you described, where municipal kind of processes are preventing people from earning a livelihood and being less dependent on the state, needs a radical shift of thinking. There's not one, two economies. There's one economy. Some people are informal, some people are formal. And as you said, these are often marginalized groups. Women, youth, elderly, foreign nationals. Yes, there are a lot of challenges in the sector dealing with counterfeit goods, mafia. I could almost call it the life and death situation. And Salga Free State held a follow-up conference from the Salga National Conference in Limpopo last year on the informal economy. And we are trying to do exactly what you say. Bring an LED-friendly approach to the informal economy. That means defending LED-friendly policy, which we've got a guideline, LED-friendly bylaws, taking it all the way to enforcement. And in fact, confiscating goods and closing down stores is not actually a solution. That's a last resort. If you've got to that, then all communication is broken down. Your structures are broken down. Councillors have not been responsible, etc. So, ALC by the recommendation, that was from the question. It solely supports a developmental approach in SMEs, cooperatives, and informal traders in the LED plans. And the second comment of that about the national policy is that if you look at the new growth path, besides mentioning one or two lines about the social economy and co-ops, it does not recognize the informal economy at all. So it's at a national government level, there is not much that kind of acknowledgement, like in countries like Brazil, China, India, South America, where the informal economy takes up 50 to 70% of the economy, which is encouraged. It's not coming from the top. It's very difficult for us as well to kind of have a contradictory view, even though we try. So I support that. Your estimate on NED. I've been asked a question by the previous chair of SAGA, Amos Masonda, and the Minister of Economic Development. It's impossible to give you that. In the sense that, what is NED? As you said, if you, when we gave Laingsburg the Bruno Award, or Copter Government acknowledged Laingsburg, they took that 2 million rand and they built, they tarred the road from Laingsburg to Matiesfontein, to that historic hotel. So that means, I don't know, let's say 30% more people went down that road to see the hotel. Maybe they spent more time there. Maybe they spent money there. Is that LED? It is, because you are, and they made it a labor-intensive project, etc. Now, to try to capture that across every municipality is very difficult. The procurement way of doing it is a far easier way, and I think national government in the new growth path has come up with indicators. And I think what we haven't done is done an exercise of that, of saying, let's take procurement, employment, support to SMEs, and maybe one other indicator, and aggregate that and use that as a benchmark. But that has never been done, because it is undefined, as you said. But I think if you can raise that at another forum and give, I mean, it's not an easy study to do, but we could do it. I think it would turn the head on it would be a very useful ace to have in our deck. To sort of aggregate the local government. This is how they touch people's lives. And it's not just the metros, it's small towns. And I've heard of many examples where, you know, municipalities don't employ everybody on their books to keep a gap of people so that they can employ piecemeal jobs. I know that's not formalized, but it gets down to that small town where you actually know the mayor and you know the municipal manager. It gets down to that level as well. I fully agree. It's about water, electricity, transport, access to markets. I mentioned here technology. You know, just think about what having a cell phone has done to people. They're accessible. They can communicate. They can apply for jobs from the Eastern Cape to Gauteng if they need to. I've mentioned the issue of the cost of the certification agencies. I think the fact alone that there are no certification agencies in Limpopo or Mpumalanga should be a red flag for National Treasury and the DTR. Yeah. I mean, and the ones that are there are all in the metro area. Yeah. Surely that would say, hold on, I mean, what are you really saying? Yeah. So even in a municipality, the reality is that the supply chain manager will implement the policy, but it will affect local economic development. Right.
Did you make National Treasury aware of the situation that you got?
The first time we formally engaged was on Friday. That was the first time we were given a platform to present that. It wasn't even a platform. So from that meeting, we're having another meeting. And not only our challenge, EFCOM was at that meeting as well in a heavy presence. They've got EFCOM, all the SOEs were not governed by this regulation previously. They also had similar developmental goals about targeting SMEs, etc. And now they've also got their own forum with DTI, National Treasury, to engage on those issues. So there will be no consultation on that. They all go to municipality company and have never seen this regulation. And if they have, it's only been through... You can't go on a roadshow and say implement this. It doesn't work like that in 278 municipalities. I can leave the presentation. I made it in behind if you like that. Okay, the issue of Eastern Cape issues... at a very superficial level, the rural, comprehensive rural development strategy and local government are not aligned. If you're just using the terms rural development, it seems to be that rural development and their processes are very much community orientated and come and sort of undermine local government in a way. But in cases like this, let's say there's no development, and they would implement something, but they would leave, and local government would remain behind to face the hiccups, the challenges, the operational costs, etc. But I think there have been processes to improve that. The role of local government and land reform, commonages, etc., I would have to get back to you on that. I would fully support that. I think in our position paper on LED, we say there's a failure of agriculture policies in general. And in fact, there is no connection between agriculture and local government. It's not seen as a... There's no linkage between the sector and local government or the department and local government. And in fact, we were approached by FMME trying to encourage small-scale farmers or commercial black farmers, and we said we can't help you because local government doesn't have the mandate to support local farmers. I'm sure they do. And I'm sure local government is sitting a lot of unused land, which could be better used. Or for commonages is a good example. And I think we would support small-scale farming, especially from a community development angle. But I'll have to get back to you on if there's a legislative issue there. The coordination issue, I can just talk more generally. I mean, I cannot comment on the role of provinces or districts, seeing that they are our members, but there are more misalignment than alignment often. I think, obviously, the differentiated approach would be the most suitable. Two is I would certainly go through a kind of much more simplified, locally owned approach to development. I think LED as a topic needs new leadership from a national government perspective, or a new voice, let's just say. If the Department of Economic Development, you're not talking about LED, then who is? It is still going to remain, and in reality, you know, there are people in the Department of Corporate Governance going around setting up co-ops because the previous minister wanted a co-op per ward. You know, maybe that project shelves now, but, you know, there's just this scatter gun of ideas trying to help poor, unemployed, inequality, oppressed individuals, when in reality, you know, capacitated local government is a stakeholder, not the only stakeholder, but I think, you know, basically a small municipality should have one or two LED projects, and that's all. Whether it's a spend on infrastructure and labor-intensive construction methods and, you know, creating a new baseline and not the chicken projects and the piggery projects or the other projects that land there and nobody ever knows why they're here. So maybe that's not a clear enough answer, but the Chinese example, China is a very successful example of whether you say SME development, I'd say it's a culture of entrepreneurship. You may call it socialism, but it's a culture of entrepreneurship. And as much as government gives, ultimately, the private sector, whether it's an informal trader who we include in the private sector, or SME, or a medium-sized business, or a black-empowered farm, whatever, that is where jobs are created. There is no other model. It is not a long-term sustainable model. So, I'll give you an example. What we're doing now with TEP, I don't know if you've heard of TEP, Tourism Enterprise Partnership, it's like the incubator for. So we're partnering with TEP now to educate councillors about what tourism really is. Because if you're a local government, you think you know what tourism is, but in fact it's not as simple as a B&B in a township. It's about marketing. It's about managing your roads. It's like road signage. It's about all these environmental issues. So that's what we're doing. And then what we're also trying to do is, through LED, partner local tourism initiatives with TEP. Because we don't have the expertise in local government. So I'm just trying to say, it's not always about having the answers. I can only concur with the challenges around the politics. More LED is put onto scorecards as a performance management and more with energy is also seen as roads and infrastructure and baseline development, then there'll be less opportunity for these small like handouts or projects. And the comment on the IDZ, look, I didn't put a spatial view of LED. I think it'd be an interesting exercise. I mean, tourism, for example, did a GCP study of where tourism potential is and where it's not unlocked. The IDZ have been a failure, unfortunately, in many cases. And in fact, the policy is bound to be revoked or has been, and they're bound to rename it the SEZ, Special Economic Zones. And I think all the challenges about misalignment or the commentary on the actually what happened was the IDZ were actually competing with each other for the same investors, and it was the economic crisis came and power shortages, etc. So I agree with that. I think at a local level there may be not enough integration of the IDZs into the local strategy, just like the opportunities in the local economic agencies. But you know, as soon as you've given somebody a seat of power, then there becomes this dual, the people aren't working together, whether it's the IDZ and the municipality or metro or the LEDA and the municipality. But I agree, I think I didn't mention it, but I am a strong favour of spatial development and LED. And I think the example that I give, which I'm sorry I didn't show you the maps, but how Mombela has looked at the municipality as a space, and the west of Mombela is White River and all of these beautiful golf resorts, and it's the eastern part that is underdeveloped. And therefore, they put all their incentives into development on the east. You don't pay a rate for 3 years. You go, I can show you the sliding scale, but you get, depending on the number of jobs you create, you get different types of incentives. So this is unique at local government, because they haven't been, there's very little tools they have to play with in terms of incentives. Incentives always sit at the national government level. Local government incentives are rare. They think like, we'll fast-track your application, we'll give you zero rates, we'll discount your water or electricity, we'll take the... things like that. If you look at the arsenal of tools at local government in terms of incentives, they don't sit at the local government sphere. And maybe for the capacitated municipalities, that's maybe an opportunity. But, and the other side of that, we always focus on incentive. What about retaining existing businesses? And I can tell you now, if you're a company in failure, there are a lot of incentives available at the IDC. I can't tell you how well accessible they are. Or if anybody's going to their municipal LED office to ask about it, which is there's a sphere of government, there should be a kind of that opportunity. Everything gets raised up to the national minister. This factory's closing, that mine's closing, always goes there. It's not locally owned enough. So these are the complexities of the issue. I mean, I regret not having very strong recommendations here so that you could approve them or disapprove, but I thought it's more of a story, LED, and if Cocktail was in the room and the DDSA in the room, you'd get maybe a different slightly picture. Some of the things that I take are strongly the issue around better counsellors and more transparency in LED, but also simpler LED, and the informal economy being part of that, definitely. So I don't know if I've answered all the questions. The green economy, absolutely. In fact, when I mentioned it at the national conference, in fact, we wrote a whole chapter on it in the paper, the city of Shawnee, the mayor, he made the right point. But the green economy is nothing new to local government. They've been doing the green economy, or should be doing the green economy for many years. And in fact, cities over the world compete on this. And it's beyond just green energy. It's about incentives for solar panels. For example, there's this dilemma between if residents install solar panels and the municipality makes money off electricity, they are losing a revenue source. Can you see how that dilemma? So what the recommendations, I mean, they hear that Solver's trying to bounce around that municipalities should be renting out solar panels as an idea. Because to keep the revenue but go green. Then there's the green building standards, waste management, water management, rainwater catchment management. In fact, I'll give you another example of the GTR. GTR through the SLB has issued a standard on green buildings. And they wonder why municipalities, they haven't shared this with anybody. They don't share their they just implement the FABS code on or the green building standards, but it's never gone down to local government level. So green economy for local government is actually a hot topic and a low-hanging fruit, let's call it that. And in fact, the opportunity for jobs, greening, etc. Sorry, I'm rambling on. I wanted just to try to get into this, but it seems to be very slow. Maybe the issue, but I just wanted to show you the provincial pages on the ED network if it can connect. If not, I'll come back to it. Yeah. Oh, there. So this is what the website looks at, and if you just go here, provinces and municipalities, Limpopo, there's some of the case studies. So not all the municipalities are there, but where we have content. So Mpumalanga, there's some examples from the tweet. And there. So if you want to go to Mbeela, so the case study that I've talked about here on the good practice team should be in there. But and if you've got any, I mean, your query, you could come, you know, there. It's a bit of information about Mbeela, and then et cetera, et cetera. And there should be some. The documents aren't linked, but so hopefully you can find some useful information here as a start. And here are the, so here are the documents. Here's the good practice scheme. This is on the website, but it's freely available on the website. I can give it to you as well. But here's the, you know, the good practice scheme project. Some of this information goes back a few years ago.
Thank you, Douglas. Mr. Chair, to add on to what Douglas has said, if the one question has been that came up with the point about the seats to be taken up on the NCLP, you know, at this stage, we, the new councillors that started on since May month, the election on the Targa NEC took place in September, 1st of September, I think. And, you know, we're also all still trying to find our feet and so on. And but fortunately, myself, you know, my experience in my career in local government span over especially those small little towns, Carnarvon, Caledon's, and Grahamstown, one of the places. But the point is, my experience in these number of different types of towns, and even the seaside, like Gordon's Bay, for instance, they all differ, and that I can assure you. But may I say that as far as taking up the seat at the NCLP, that is one of our problems that when we started off, and that is that most of our councillors on the NEC is either speakers or mayors or deputy mayors and so forth. And the time that we have to spend on Saga matters are getting, I would say, the heavy load is by daily coming up. There is a thought about trying to get the NEC members on a more permanent basis. Yes, if we can get that, and especially the fact that we are a making of the Constitution, it's not a case of that we're just an association. The Constitution, in actual fact, is stipulated. Now, we're going to try and do that and discuss it with the Minister and see whether we can't get a permanency on the NCLP and to take up those seats of ours. Yes, I would fully agree that our biggest problem that we have is the training of councillors as well. I, for instance, did with the new councillors. I've been in the game for a number of years already and did some training for the new councillors. I believe my practical experience does count with, but as you see, this little booklet on the council's guide, this is something we've thought about as well to try and get the staff in your different municipalities to capacitate them as well with a type of a conference or training type of situation. Yes, we are trying to do that. What I found very interesting this morning is the fact that you also had a number of questions that you even didn't know about. And, Mr. Chair, if it's a case of that you, after you've seen or been through the papers or the websites, etc.,
and you've got pertinent questions that you would like to put to us, and we can do a presentation to you again, feel free, please, to do that. And I think we will oblige by coming down and giving to you that information again. It might be occasionally just a 15 days and so forth. But our concern at this stage and moment is the fact that our government departments does not speak to us. They regard them as another sphere of government, and that's not the case. We're all on the same level. And that is unfortunate, very unfortunate. I think the last meeting that Douglas has had, he told me that, irrespective of the fact, the chairperson of the last meeting we had actually instructed these guys this year to get Saga involved. I don't know. Douglas, you'd like to comment on it in actual fact what happened, but that is our biggest problem. We've got to try and get back, especially on this procurement policy that's coming up. Yes, we can't tell you, listener, please let it be withdrawn at this stage. Yet, if you can, it will be to our benefit and to the people outside that we are working for. And really, I'm crying my heart out for this type of situation, because I would like to see people getting jobs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Cohen. And Mr. Cohen and Councillor Maitland, maybe you are on your way up to become a councillor. some of our members one member has to leave now because he's attending one of the very important meetings of Parliament, the remuneration meeting with Tash Charity. To go and associate our interest in that meeting. But you know, members, I was just whispering to Honourable Gamede and Councillor Cohen that as the NCOP is a very significant house, I think this committee should take the leading role in calling a summit where we get all the government departments to ourselves, where we discuss this issue and we get answers from the department. Treasury, OCTA, TBSA, IDC, DTI, Economic Development, the whole lot, you know, where we thrash it out properly over 2 or 3 days and we go out there with answers, resolutions, and commitments. That is one of the big things that we will definitely, the Secretariat and the Inquiry and myself and Honorable Gamere, we will work on such a program and get the dates and invite you. I mean, we can also use DDP, Salga, and you know, you understand. But everyone in one room to say that, guys, because the informal economy is such a big economy that people doesn't know that. But on that note, we've got one of our trusted lieutenants leaving us at the end of the month for greener pastures. He's also leaving Cape Town to Pretoria. So the committee has decided, Honorable Nyambi, through Madam Grace Denizulu and Madam W.J.M. Slomi, to host a lunch for Mr. Lwazi Muslambu at 12:30. So if you are done with that important meeting, you can join us at Mark's Building Restaurant, Old Assembly Restaurant, for the lunch for the going away of Mr. Muslambu. Honorable Nyambi, you are excused. Thank you. Honourable members, are there any more questions? Mama Bihali. One of the best councillors of Gauteng. You know, that was one of the best councillors of Gauteng.
Thank you very much. I think that one of their principles is to see the community members being able to improve their quality of life. But there is members who are also community members, but they are not sufficient to work. They only get an allowance from the government. Hopefully, it does not even give them an access to have medical aid in their families, and those are traditional leaders. I just want to know the role of Salga when it comes to the traditional leaders, because these people are not being well catered for.
sometimes of the bullying. That is why members will always complain, or the councillors will always complain about traditional leaders who are not taking care of them in case of a land issue. Yeah, that's my question. Thank you very much.
Any other more? Honorable Sinclair?
Thank you, Chair. You know, a lot of reference being made to China now. I know people like to go to China for various reasons. But the fact of the matter is, you must compare apples with apples. And I don't think it would at least serve our purpose well if we want to try and compare South Africa's situation with China. And that was exactly the point that I tried to make initially. Is the success of China is based on many levels. But one of them, the fact that there's a master plan, if you like, of how do they roll out the economy. And the one thing that we didn't even touch is the uncoordinated way that local government on many aspects engage themselves. You know, we're not talking even about the engagement or trying to get investment. We would go to a place in the world somewhere, then we realize, no, but the municipality was here to come and ask for investment. Then the next week, another municipality is asking the same thing. So, I think the answer, once again, lies in this whole issue that Honorable Gamede and other members raised to say, we've now been talking about this issue about the seat of Salga being available in terms of the constitution. The challenge to Salga is, tell us, when are you going to set it up here? That is the answer. Where you can come and sit around the table and say, engage in debate to say, but listen, from an organized local government perspective, let's do this and this and this. I hope at some stage in the near future, before 2040, that Salga take up that opportunity. But once again, it's a political decision. There must be a political will to implement that decision. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Honorable
Sinclair.
Mr.
Gould.
Thank you,
Chair.
I'll leave the political question for political leadership. I think the question of coordinated development is valid. I think whether you call it development or not, local government has to function. The roads need to be unpotholed, water needs to be clean. So I call that the business of local government. And I'm not saying they can't have a developmental agenda. I mean, that would be the ideal, to mainstream that. But I think we need to differentiate in terms of priorities of that, and to also drive that development agenda. But I would not say that there's a master plan being implemented currently. Although I think there's a considerable amount of shared thinking about job creation, which I haven't heard of previously. I think that there is a common language of the challenge. And I think what the phrase that we're all responding to it differently, but maybe that's an opportunity. The question around traditional healers or traditional leaders, I'd say it's an area that could be done a lot better. There are municipalities that have very good working relationships with their land or traditional leaders, and others where it is broken down. And from a municipal perspective, and this is not right or wrong, I'm just saying that comment that traditional leaders are holding back development, or they're not releasing land, or they aren't exposing their people to opportunities. From the traditional leader's perspective, maybe they haven't been included in the development enough, they haven't been respected or communicated adequately. I think at Salga we have to represent our members, but on the other hand, I think there could be a much stronger case-by-case review of unlocking some of the bottlenecks. I think
that the reality is that corporate governance includes traditional authorities, and municipalities have that role to play, but it, I will say it does add a complexity. And maybe you have some specific examples that maybe we could take up, that in theory, the municipality is responsible for that area of land, and the tribal authority owns the land, or has the rights to the land. And I think that is an opportunity for friction, which I'm not saying can be bad friction, but could be different perspectives on that friction. I'll leave it there. I think it would make it harder for example, if you took EPWP as a program and try to implement it in a traditional leader's jurisdiction, and it's not taken up, I think it could be perceived in different ways by different people. And I think local government, especially with the new councillors, I don't know if councillor Nathan wants to say, would have to, may not have the capacity to, or experience to deal with the kind of challenges. And Salga is a body where we probably have the same challenges, but I know at a leadership level, RCO meets with the traditional house I think they're called traditional house of leaders, and sits on that forum as well. So I think there's opportunity for improvement.
Thank you, Douglas. Yes, thank you very much. I think we will go into that question as well and possibly do a better investigation as far as that is concerned and see what we can come up with our next meeting and see what the answers for you. Mr. Chair, as far as the taking up of the seat, Mr. Sinter, yes, most definitely. I was, to my surprise, in actual fact, when I came onto the NEC, surprised that there was no seats were taken up by NEC. Yes, we, as I said, we're having our hotline about 14 days time, and this is one of the points of discussion, and we will definitely try and promote this. My question, my problem again is, you know, you're sitting with almost full-time councillors, and that is a problematic situation, but as I said, we're going to try and resolve this matter with the higher authorities and see what we can come up with. For that,
honourable members, nothing more? Okay, now, Councillor Gatlin and Mr. Cowan, let me on behalf of the committee thank you for the presentation. It's really an eye-opener. And remember that you've got partners in the NCOP. It's your house that you've got constitutionally, you've got 10 seats, you've got say you can't just vote, but the Constitution has given you the right to be in the NCOP. And you can use the platform. And specifically this committee, in terms of LED, as we are, our oversight mandate also stems from local, from economic development. As I say, we vote to municipalities, and we found that there's a lack for, as you rightly say, that they don't understand LED or they don't know what LED is. And for me, it is it's one of a worrying aspect. If you look at, you go to our townships, you can go to a school in the township now, you'll see informal economy and informal trading happening. People selling sweets or anything outside the school gate or the fence of the school, through the fence of the school and all that, selling it, trying to make a living. You do get these stalls. You know, it's not like in some of your leafy suburbs where everything is in the shop and that. But if you look at most of our areas where people are living, it is the informal trading and informal economy that is playing a very big role. And I think we need to support that. We need to really support that. And there's a lot of lessons. And as you are also part of your baby, you can, at some stage, we'll call you to come and brief us more about that so that we can work in as partners, you know, to plow this back to municipalities and say, don't close the door if people want paid, but rather help them to fish instead of standing with bucket hands, outstretched hands.
to volunteer in Afrikaans, Prapa Almo. But rather give them and learn them how to fish than just once and once and once. So with that, I want to thank you. It's a parting word from your side.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I think we're going to walk out here more relieved than concerned, and I think we've got partners now. And if you will allow me, I would rather say Freddy Arabs. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think this is we can stand with a brick on something good here. I think you would understand our problems. Yes, capacity is a big problem, and we'll have to address it in one other way. But this is what we're going for. Capacitate people to fend for themselves. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you. I just want to thank the committee for the opportunity. I'm hoping the people in management. And just a concern, Salga is the only person raising the procurement issue as an example. There's numerous government departments who should understand this. So hopefully, this is one avenue that can, the force of government can, the wheels of government can work in to achieve its checks and balances. But I appreciate all the questions, and with the tip of the iceberg, a lot more information can be made available. Thank you very much.
May I just say thank you to Douglas. I know you will notice that he's perspiring a lot, but he's got to have only a bit of a temperature there. But thank you very much, Douglas.
Hopefully we'll see you. Committee, just 1 minute of your time. You can just stay behind. Thank you very much once again. Like I said, it's really an eye-opener. And we will definitely, because I know most of our committee members are passionate about local government, and they're passionate about delivering in their communities. Although Farmingen was very quiet about Coca, because I think Coca was one of the municipalities that the LED network is moving in. It's working. If it was not working, I would have heard you. But it's working. That's why I can hear you. Honorable Abrams is also a councillor, and so there's quite a lot of ex-councillors in this committee. With that, you are excused. Thank you very much. Honorable members,